Hey folks, welcome into Onto Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Going to talk Cubs fresh off the regular season finale at Wrigley Field. Cubs pulled off the sweep. It is, we'll get into whether they absolutely needed to do that or not, but it sure felt like that as of Friday. And then the Cubs now go on the road to face the Braves and the Brewers for the final two series of the regular season. They are, as of this moment, still a game up on the Marlins for that final wildcard spot. They are fractionally behind the Diamondbacks for the second wildcard spot, which at this point you care less about getting that second spot and more just staying in the postseason. But getting to that in a moment, I thought we should start with the most important Chicago story in the news, which is that Taylor Swift was at the Bears game. So how, you know.
Do we have to talk about, why even mention here's the Bears, Brett? This is so depressing.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. The funny thing is that, now, don't get me wrong, Taylor Swift is a huge story in anything that she does. She's fantastic and talented, and I listen to much of her music in my car and sing loudly to it. But I think it is really indicative of where things are with the Bears that, like, nobody anywhere at any level outside of angry Bears fans and media would even mention that the Bears exist, because it was that the Chiefs are awesome and there's Taylor Swift. And I think about that often, and I have, especially with this start to the Bears season, where we all know, like, we're baseball guys, but the Bears dominate the sporting culture here in Chicago. That's just how it is. If they are ever decent, you wouldn't be able to get in a word on anything else. And it has been wild to watch the contrast between a Cubs team, an organization that is now out of a very short rebuild and competing again. I was noting this morning, with that win yesterday, have locked up their they have had a winning season in 7 of the last 9 years. Only twice in the last 9 years did they have a losing season. It was the 2 years of this rebuild. That's actually kind of incredible when you think about it, and especially when you think about whether it's other organizations in Chicago like the Bears, or if it's other baseball teams that go through these cycles. Like, when I think of other teams that have 7 of 9 winning years, I'm like, oh, that's a good organization. That's an organization that has its shit together. And I think before we get into the specifics of this series and the games ahead for the Cubs, I do think that's worth a bit of a nod. That's a very strong run when you really think about it.
Yeah, I would say this. Six of those 7 years, I believe, postseason play, right? And I don't think, if you talk to the hardcore fans, they'd say it's good enough. And I think that's good. I think that's good. Like, let's keep a higher standard. Let's take in all context and nuance and make sure we hold this team accountable for making sure that they put the best possible team out on the field as often as possible. And they haven't done that at all times, but they're being pushed to do so, right? There are expectations, and when this rebuild started, everyone was like, "Oh, this can't be long. That's not acceptable anymore. What happened last time is not cool. We're not doing that again." And you know, to their credit, they've done that. I don't want to get ahead of myself and give them too much credit, because they're in the middle of trying to do something that I feel is pretty important to kind of punctuate what they're doing right now, and getting into the postseason really matters, I think. And it's not a organizational failure if they don't, but it's a failure of the 2023 season and what it's become, right? I think narratives can shift throughout the course of a year, and this one has shifted to the point where you have to say that not making the playoffs is a huge disappointment with the way this season has gone, with the way the last month has played out. it's become an expectation, and I think that should be going forward. Everyone should be held to that standard, from the players to the manager, all the way up to Jed Hoyer and Tom Ricketts.
I think even if you go back to some of the principal figures involved in that, what was it, Brett? 7 of 9 seasons? Was that the
7 of 9?
I think if you ask some of them privately, deep down, how they look back at that time, there's a lingering sense of frustration and disappointment that they could have done more. And that's not me being a hater or anything like that. I think that's just how people at that time genuinely feel. And that's not taking anything away from an amazing World Series title and all the work that it took to get to that point. But these are, you know, competitive people who have very, front-facing jobs. And that's, you know, how I believe they processed some of that stuff. So you can only imagine how some of the fans feel. But, yeah, I mean, this final week, there's a lot riding on it. I just feel like it's crazy to say, if they win, whatever, 85 games or 84, but if you get into the playoffs or don't, like, there's just a massive gap, both perception-wise and also just the reality of how they're going to experience this offseason, the beginning of next season, next year's trade deadline. Like, all that stuff is tied together here, and I do think it would be a failure to not reach the playoffs, given the very low bar that has been set, and just how many things have gone right this year. I mean, we've talked about this before of, when we're in off-season spring training mode, like, what would it take for the Cubs to get in the playoff conversation? Like, so many of those things have happened, and it'll be really interesting to watch to see, like, who steps forward, who messes up and ruins the season. Like, that's what these games are. I think, Sahade, if you wrote it, like, every game is the biggest game of the year until they've either clinched a playoff spot or have been eliminated. And that's, like, what these next 6 nights will be like for them.
Yeah, there's two sides of it that reminds me a lot of the pitching win statistic, actually, for a weird comparison here. But, we rail on that as a stat, or at least I do, because so much of the outcome has nothing to do with anything the pitcher can control. You know, a pitcher can throw a total crap game, but if his team blows up for 10 runs, he gets a win. And it's like, what is the point of that statistic? And I think about the 6 games remaining for the Cubs, and, they could win 5 of 6 the rest of the way. That's 87 wins on the year. That is they did well. That's a good year, and that's a good finish. I think anyone observing would say if they take 5 of 6 the rest of the way, that's a great finish. But if the Marlins were to win out and the Diamondbacks went out, the Cubs missed the playoffs. Same outcome, same 87 wins that could get them in or not, that has nothing to do with anything they can control. And yet the outcome would feel so different between those two. And that's not me disagreeing with it. I think that's right. I think for whatever reason, getting to 85, 86 wins and missing the playoffs is going to be a lot of discourse about how, well, it was a successful year, but getting 84, 85, 86 wins and making the playoffs, it's, well, that was just a successful year. It was a good year. And again, some of that is not within the Cubs' control at this point. Now, they can control it in terms of winning out. If they win out, they're in. Okay. Probably tough to do, even against a Braves team that's close to taking that number one overall seed and a Brewers team that's about to clinch. They just need one more win or Cubs loss. But I think that we do have to remember that it's a long season. We've said this before. Every loss counts. That was in your control. Of course, many of the losses this year were within the Cubs' control, and they didn't have to be in this spot even as recently as 2 weeks ago. They were 4 games up in the second wild card spot. So I don't want to let them off the hook for that, because whatever the outcome now, there always was a period where they let some of this slip away. And now they're in a spot where it's, like we've said, it's kind of like trade deadline part 2, where the Cubs really have had to be very hot, play very well, stay very day-to-day to be able to make the playoffs. And obviously the Pirates series did not go particularly well, although David Ross, with just the all-time savvy move of saying that the Pirates are crap right before the Pirates go to play the Reds, beat them down once, come back from 9-0 to beat them again, and then they get the Marlins in the final series. So hopefully, you know, David Ross and or someone else with the Cubs can think of another way to get out into the media right before that Marlins series that the Pirates really are a terrible, terrible team and organization. you know, Tim, you can title this podcast or maybe Thursdays. The Pirates are terrible. That'll be like the title, and we'll blast that everywhere. So anyway, that's I think how we circle up the two things about the feeling that it's a good thing to have won a winning record 7 of the last 9 years, but fundamentally there's something different about making the playoffs. That goes to both of your points about that. You could survey the hardcore fans and say that these last 9 years were sort of a mix, even though it was good results. And Mooney's saying there'd be people with the organization who'd say they wish they had done more. And I think everyone would agree with that. And that's because winning seasons should be the baseline. When you are this Cubs organization in this division, you should be winning. You should have a winning record in 7 of 9 seasons, if not 8 of 9 or 9 of 9. What should be the measuring stick is, did you make the postseason and did you make a run? And this is the first year coming out of this rebuild that the Cubs really did give themselves a good chance to make the playoffs. And now, as Sahadev said, narratives evolve as the year goes on. That's the measuring stick. They got to make the playoffs. That is what's going to define whether this was a successful year or not. And maybe that's not fair, but that's just where it has landed.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think if you would have asked anybody on the record, they would have said it entering Friday's game. But I kind of felt like coming into that series, the only way you feel good about things is a sweep. I honestly did not know what to expect. The way they the pitching, like there's so many things you could. I think we said this last podcast, or I said this last podcast, that I'm not even sure what I'm most concerned about. I am now. I'm most concerned about the bullpen at the moment. But in general, this team, you know, that they answered the bell when they needed to this weekend, right? They came back twice to beat the Rockies on Saturday and Sunday. They took it to them on Friday, while it was probably closer than it needed to be, and you know, sometimes I'm just like perplexed by how the offense can look like a well-oiled machine and then struggle so much against certain pitchers. But you know, I'm going to chalk that up to that's baseball, and just, you know, sometimes like that's why it's impossible to understand or predict some of this stuff. I think if I had to point to one thing that I'm just like, I don't know how they're going to get through these next 6 games, it is that bullpen. I was just looking at the roster to try and think through how they do this, and I just think it's time for some guys to step up. I mean, there are 3 names that pop up, and it's Jose Kwas, Hayden Wisniewski, and Daniel Palencia. Like, those are the guys that if I'm David Ross, I'm looking at and saying, I need you guys to get me out in critical situations. Julian Merriweather is clearly running on fumes. David Ross was asked about Mark Leiter in the post game yesterday because he hadn't been used in a while. And the question was phrased something like, I assume there's something amiss with Mark Leiter, something like that, right? Like it wasn't like a direct question. So Ross, like he tends to do, danced around it and said, you can assume what you want. Yeah, go ahead and assume that, right? Like, write whatever you want, essentially, is what he said. So something is up with Mark Leiter. Something is up with Julian Merriweather, I think. Like, it's clear that he's off. And Alzolay is not going to be activated on Tuesday. We'll see when he's ready, if he's ready. Ross pretty much made it seem like Michael Fulmer is not coming back this regular season. That's the four guys that got them here in the bullpen. So now that's why I say it's time for these guys to step up. They absolutely have to. There's nothing you can really there's no other way that this is going to work. These starters aren't going nine innings. The offense is going to have to jump out and give big leads. Otherwise, that's the only other option, really. And obviously, I think the big name that I didn't mention right there, and we can dive into why he's even in the bullpen, is Javier Assad. Probably, you know, he was down yesterday on Sunday. They didn't need him, but Javier Assad's going to be a big weapon out of the bullpen in these next 6 days. Obviously back in the bullpen after that surprise start from Marcus Stroman. David Ross just dropping that bomb on us Friday after the win and just casually saying it and then leaving the press conference room that Marcus Stroman is starting Saturday. So, the Marcus Stroman saga has been one of the odder ones I've covered as far as, you know, like twists and turns and nobody really having any idea what direction it's going to go, even people within the organization. But, you know, I think it ended up working out okay for them in the sense that they got some wins and maybe they have an extra weapon in the bullpen that actually has shown that he can kind of dominate at times in various roles.
Yeah, when you're running through these bullpen options, Sahadev, I was going to say I thought Stroman volunteered to do whatever the team needed and then he'd be available starting, closing, high leverage, middle innings, multi-innings. I had to attend a friend's wedding this weekend, so my last day at Wrigley was Wednesday night, so I heard Stroman talking for about 10 minutes to a whole big group of us about he'd do whatever the skipper asked, so I was very surprised to see Ross's post-game announcement that Stroman would be back, and I think it's kind of a tired story, to be honest. Like you alluded to, like even internally, there's not a whole lot of answers. I thought you wrote it very well, Sahadev, how Patrick Wisdom has adjusted to a very specific role and kind of didn't complain and kind of did his thing. And Stroman is definitely a guy when we talk about this final week and kind of legacies and how this season will be remembered. It's like, okay, if Stroman really wants to start that badly and, you know, is having, you know, a harder time adjusting to the bullpen, then go out and pitch well against the Braves and win the game. And that's what we'll remember if that's what happens. And if it doesn't happen, it's going to be a much different thought as he weighs his opt-out clause. And if he comes back again next year, like all this stuff kind of sticks, right?
Well, the thing that I kept thinking about with Stroman, and when he, you know, I still think back to that Diamondback series when he came out back-to-back games out of the bullpen, and it was just like, oh, okay, so this is like a very traditional bullpen usage. And the Cubs had left open the door that maybe they get lucky and he stretches out and the timing works out perfectly for his appearances to like simultaneously stretch back out while being used in the bullpen, while being in a position to make starts. And you do wonder if the fact that he was then used as a starter on Saturday, and it really was more of an opener situation because he went, I think, 64 pitches, was a nod to, okay, we need him to get us innings, but it's unpredictable. If you leave him in the bullpen, it's unpredictable when he's going to be used. You don't know exactly how that's going to work. So fine, turn it into a pseudo starter situation to at least ensure that you get those three or four innings every 5 days. But there's only one start left anyway now. So, you know, he'll pitch at the end of the Braves series. If he was at 64, you know, maybe he can give you 80 pitches maybe in this one, and you hope he's more efficient than he was on Saturday. I think, you know, I'm of two minds on that switch. I do like that Assad is available in the bullpen now. I like it more now after the last 4 days where, as you point out, Sahadev, it feels like the Cubs are sort of without those top four options in different ways. They don't have them available in the way that they were for so long during the season, and so it's nice to have Assad. The flip side is I don't love inserting someone in the rotation who's not stretched out and that is going to sometimes, like Saturday, oh, three innings and it's over. And then you have to use Assad in a way that makes him unavailable for several more days. And that's only when it works. Like, it's not a guarantee that if Assad came in for four innings against the Braves, he wouldn't get knocked around. Then you sort of have the worst of both worlds. So I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about it. I think I will just hope that he can, that Stroman can go five strong innings against the Braves this week. And then he's in a position to make a playoff start if the Cubs get there. And, you know, hopefully Assad continues to look like he did on Saturday, because the stuff played up, the velocity was up, the command was fantastic. You know, it was hard to argue with the way it played out. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, when I heard the decision, I was like a little confused. Listen, I think Assad has looked rough the previous three starts. The results were there enough that it wasn't like this is a disaster. These are disaster starts, but there were questions there about like, ooh, like this he's walking a fine line type thing, and I was concerned of how it would look. So I was like, okay, maybe this can work out in their favor. The one thing you don't want is like a three inning start. And Ross said as much. He didn't start Stroman Tuesday because he didn't want a three inning start and then have to go to Javier Assad and then be short the rest of the week in his bullpen. The one benefit here is this worked out well, in quotes, because, yeah, he got the three-inning start. He didn't want that, right? He wanted to push. I think they wouldn't give us an exact number. I think Stroman believed he could have gone longer. I mean, I know, according to what he told us, he believed he could have gone deeper. I think that was Ross kind of was like, we got to keep it here, and I'm going to trust Assad to take care of things. Assad was awesome. I want to say 49 pitches in – did he go four innings? Yeah, four scoreless innings. That's insanely efficient, and that's just like that's exactly what they needed at that point, and it's really what they needed to go forward too, because Ross does not want to be short starting tomorrow in the bullpen, and by throwing only 49 pitches, that gives him the in all likelihood down Sunday, down Monday with the off day, and now he has a full bullpen again on Tuesday. That's really important for this final week to have as many arms as possible in that bullpen. It was clear talking to Marcus Stroman after the game on Saturday that he was struggling with the bullpen role. He warmed up multiple times Wednesday. This is the life of a bullpen arm. This is what relievers go through. It is really difficult. He's a creature of routine. He talks about it all the time. Starters have their specific routine. I don't think sometimes we understand how difficult the switch in roles can be. I don't think it went well as far as Stroman being warmed up and not being used. I think that's difficult. That was difficult for him. I think it was the best thing for him and for, you know, just his future to get back in the rotation and make starts. He expressed that and he made it pretty clear after the game that this was something that he felt was for the best. And I think Marcus Stroman in the rotation, a normal Marcus Stroman in the rotation, is obviously the best thing for this team. Can we get that on Thursday? We'll see. We'll see if the Cubs can get that. It almost was a disaster, but just kind of the timing of it all kind of worked out. They got the win. The offense showed up when it needed to. And if Marcus Stroman goes out there and looks like Marcus Stroman for six innings, I don't think he looked terrible. I also don't think he was crisp, and that second inning was really, you know, there was a pop-up that dropped. If I'm remembering correctly, there was a grounder that just went under Nico's hand, glove in the three-run inning, right? Brett, you can correct me, but and there was a bloop single. There was also one off the wall that was pretty hard hit and probably goes if the wind isn't blowing in from right. If I'm trying to piece it all together in my mind But that was the only rocket that I remember, but maybe there was one more that was really hard hit. But other than that, you know, like, it's a mixed bag outing, and it's only three innings, so obviously not good enough. It's just been such a weird storyline the entire year that it's almost hard to really fully wrap my mind around the entire saga of Marcus Stroman this year. But I'm just curious to see how it ends. Like, how is he going to be able to deliver them the start that they absolutely need? What do we got? Reds elimination number is 3 or 4. They're teetering on the end, right? They're at 4. Miami's at 6, right? So we're basically counting down. Like, how many wins do the Cubs need here? Do they need to go 4-2? Do they need to go 3-3? Is that going to be acceptable? So, like Patrick mentioned and I wrote, like, every win, every game is the biggest game of the year going forward here, and certainly Marcus Stroman's next start is going to have a lot of meaning for so many different reasons. Whether it's him opting into his contract, whether it's making the playoffs, whether it's, you know, was this the right decision or not? All of these storylines are going to be hanging out there.
And that ultimately is what people will remember, right? Like, if he wins that game, like, that's what we're going to be talking about. And I think, you know, in defense of Stroman, and Brett called this out in real time, like, this dude hadn't pitched for months, hadn't pitched out of the bullpen in like 9 years, and the Cubs use him in back-to-back days in really high leverage games. Like, I, you know, can't blame him if he's looking at some of the process here and raising his hand and being like, what's going on? Like, what is the best path for us to try to make the playoffs? And Stroman obviously was awesome at the beginning of the year. He was a major reason why they didn't sell, just because he gave them enough to, like, stay afloat to finally kind of find to start banking some wins there in the middle of the summer. But yeah, it does come down to Thursday, and if he can give them some innings, if he can win that game, I think that'll be kind of the closing shot on his season.
Well, and of course, Stroman, not the only storyline in the rotation remaining, and I agree with Sahadev that the bullpen is where I have most of my heartburn, but it would, of course, be nice to see Justin Steele bounce back strong, you know, kind of critical at this point. To that end, too, it would be very nice if the Cubs could clinch before the final game of the regular season so they don't have to make a decision on using Steele again in that finale against the Brewers, because then he'd be unavailable in the division series. So we will see what the Cubs do in Atlanta. They will luck out and miss both Max Fried and Charlie Morton in that series, each of whom have gone on the injured list with kind of smaller ticky-tack stuff in advance of the Braves' own postseason run. And then, of course, the Cubs finish with the Brewers, where If all goes to my plan, at least, Cubs will finish up in Milwaukee and then stay in Milwaukee and beat the Brewers in the wild card series there. That would be, I just think that would really make for a nice story the rest of the way. Got to get there first, and it starts tomorrow in Atlanta for the Cubs. Three games there, three games in Milwaukee, and like you guys have been saying since the jump, it feels like it's its own postseason run right now. Every win is going to potentially be the deciding factor for the Cubs. So we will be back at you on Thursday in advance of the finale against the Braves. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you listening as always. We'll have to, you know, when the season ends, see, we don't have home and road here on to Waveland. It's all home, but we'll sing like Go Cubs Go with you and do a fan appreciation dance, you know, at the end of the regular season. So we'll save it for that. I did think that was nice. Cubs did that, of course, as they always do for the home finale yesterday. And I always get a little, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. So I thought that was sweet. All right, everyone, take care. We'll talk to you again soon.